information where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.
Okay, so we've only got a very short second half, so we have to be out of here, it seems. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to touch on some of the stuff that I'm going to be talking about in the Shift 2 workshops. And you know, what is always fantastic is that there's always something that we tap into in the aether or whatever. Because you know, what is really interesting is that we can always find there's a number of different people talking on very similar subjects, maybe coming at it from different angles, but nonetheless, you know, it's an underlying theme. And of course, you know, each one of us can reach out to sort of different people because we all latch on to things in different ways. And a big part, I think, of what we need to prepare for is literally dealing with the unexpected. It's literally getting ourselves into the headspace where it doesn't really matter what the fuck goes down. We can just go, yes, okay. It doesn't impact us. You know, it doesn't drive us into meltdown. It doesn't drive us into, oh my God, Mr. Government, Mr. Cameron, save us, save us. You know, we are in a headspace where we are ready to be able to deal with anything. And that's why, you know, literally, the practical things, like stocking up with the food and the water, and if you have any, you know, spare liquidity, then, you know, take... Because if you have worked all your life to accumulate a nest egg, and you suddenly realise that it's evaporating, what's it going to do? It's going to put you into stress. It's normal. Of course it will. So the smart thing to do is to actually start to think about, you know, what do we do? How do we avoid getting caught up in this drama? Because that's what these guys are trying to do. They're actually trying to create a situation where people effectively become totally subjugated and malleable and will do exactly what they're told and behave effectively like sheep. And they know that we're individually and collectively, we're way beyond this. You know, this is the wonderful piece of artwork that has been the core to my Shift workshops. Because this is the construct. This, the left side of the brain, represents the construct that has been created. Where from the moment of birth, every effort is made to ensure that we turn out a good slave. But actually, even that is not being achieved now, of course, because you know, one of the other articles that was in the media over the last couple of days is that employers are saying that the graduates that are coming out of university are unemployable. You know, and I've heard it said from people who work in academia that to get a 2-2 today, to get a 2-2, a second-class honours degree, is no different from A-levels 30 years ago. And of course we've got phenomenal problems with literacy and numeracy. And that's deliberate as well. You know, those of us who are the wrong side of 50, or I would say perhaps the right side of 50 right now, but those of us who are the right side of 50, you know, we were probably the last generation that actually went through school having to do everything longhand. So consequently, you know, the over 50s actually, as a generic statement, have far superior mental arithmetic skills than those in their 20s today. Now, obviously, there are exceptions, many, many exceptions to prove the rule. It's a generic statement. You know, we've got a generation of people that cannot read maps. Yeah, because they have a sat nav. Yeah.
Turn it off.
You know, and especially women. No, I say that because literally, I tell you, when I was in Australia, there was this the woman, one of the promoters of my talks in Australia. She lived in Gold Coast. She lived in Gold Coast. She lived there all her life. And every time she came to pick me up at the hotel, we were only going from the hotel to the venue, she would punch in the code. I say, Liana, don't you? Yeah, but it's habit. It's habit. But this habit, what it does is it stops us thinking. Right? It means that we're reliant on an external resource. It's like the mental arithmetic, the reason that's lost is because we rely on a calculator. My God, you know, I was doing spreadsheets longhand 30 odd years ago. I could still use a slide. How many people here can use a slide rule? How many people here can use log tables? Anybody under 35? Okay, very good. I'm impressed. You know, but these are skills that are being lost. And some would argue they are actually being deliberately destroyed. So that there is a reliance on technology. And ultimately, when the plug is pulled on the technology, what do you do? The basics are lost. How do we start this process? Right from the get-go. Right from the get-go. Right from the vitamin K injection given literally minutes after birth, if you allow the midwife to do so. Unfortunately, of course, the vast majority of young mothers don't challenge establishment. They don't have the knowledge. Now, that's changing because the average age, for a number of reasons, a whole different subject here, but for a number of reasons, the average age at which women are having their first child is increasing at a phenomenal rate of knots. And in fact, in 2010, for the first year ever since records began, the average age at which a woman in this country had her first child was over 30. Now, what you've also got, of course, is you've got the other end of the spectrum, where you've got the other end of the social strata, where, unfortunately, many of the young girls still believe the easiest way to leave home and be housed is to get pregnant. And consequently, they have their first child at sort of 16, 17 or whatever, and their second child at 1 year later, and third one year later, and they get a bigger and bigger house, and they get bigger, you know, more and more benefits, etc., etc. This is creating another problem, and this is something that is really, really scary. The psychoactive drugs, such as Ritalin, a parent with a child on Ritalin is today entitled to £600 a month benefit because they're a carer. Yeah. If they have two children on Ritalin, they get £1,200 a month. If they have three children on Ritalin, they are entitled to £1,800 a month and apply for a car because they have three children. So I was giving this talk in... where was I? I think I was in Bournemouth last year, just before Christmas. This lady came up to me afterwards and she said, you know, you have just put a piece of the jigsaw in place for me. She said, because I work in a housing association and I have spoken to two people over the last month and they both told me they're just waiting for their doctors to prescribe Ritalin for their child and they'll be able to pay their benefit, their housing costs. And she said, I wondered how that was going to work. She said, but now you've explained it. So what we've got, of course, what we've got is literally a ridiculous situation where we've got teenage mothers who are living on benefits. They're single parent mothers in most cases, living on benefits, and they've suddenly realised there is an easy source of income. All they've got to do is get their child diagnosed as ADHD. Attention deficiency and hyperactivity.
Don't demonise single parents,
please. I'm not demonising single parents here. I'm just making the observation that this is particularly rife amongst young parents. I'm talking particularly between 17 and early 20s, who unfortunately don't know any better. They don't know better. And there was a Channel 4 documentary that was run about 4 years ago on the issue of Ritalin. And it starts off with an eight-year-old girl bouncing off the walls. I mean, it looked like, you know, it was just spin-out time after dinner. And of course, it's the same effect as cocaine on the adult brain. But let me come back to that. So this apparently was the way the child behaved pretty much 24/7, apart from the few hours that she was sleeping. The documentary team came back a few weeks later when she'd been taking a course of Ritalin. And this young girl was at the table, vacant expression on her face, drooling. And the camera crew or the interviewer said to the mother, so, you know, how does it feel now that, you know, your daughter has taken this course of Ritalin? And what the mother said was incredibly poignant. She said, well, obviously it's made my life a lot easier, but it's not my daughter. It's not my daughter. You know, pharmacologists don't understand how Ritalin works, because the pharmacology is very similar to cocaine. So in the adult brain, Ritalin has a very different effect. In fact, there's a professor of bioethics at Manchester University called Professor John Harris, who at least twice a year manages to get articles into the mainstream media promoting the idea of Ritalin being freely available over the counter in colleges and universities because it enhances concentration. Check it out. Professor John Harris, bioethics, Manchester, Ritalin. It'll take you about 3.5 nanoseconds to find out who he's funded by. In the young brain, in the developing brain, Ritalin has the opposite effect. So it's a stimulant in the developed brain, it's a depressant in the developing brain. That's why you know, there's such a dichotomy of approaches, you know, with the different age groups. The British government is spending over £40 million a year on Ritalin and similar drugs. If you Google SSRI database, SSRI database, SSRI stands for Selective Serotonin Reuptake Inhibitor, antidepressant, basically. On this database is a list, and this is, by the way, literally the input from participating medical professionals who report incidents of homicide, suicide, self-harming, that are related to people who are either on these types of psychoactive drugs or just coming off. One of the reasons that the US military has such a phenomenal problem of suicide amongst its returning servicemen is particularly the US servicemen that are in Iraq. They're given an outrageous cocktail of drugs, supposedly to protect them against anything that might be hanging around, you know, in Iraq from the various wars. The problem is, when these servicemen come home, there's no weaning period. They are literally suddenly denied the drugs. And the reason that many American servicemen commit outrageous atrocities, I mean, even like peeing on corpses, but there's far worse than that. But the, you know, when they come home, what happens? When they come off the drugs, their true self returns and they suddenly realise what they have actually participated in. I mean, imagine, like having a really bad night out. You know, most of the time you get really, really drunk and, you know, oh my God, what did I do last night? Well, you probably made an idiot of yourself, but you didn't commit murder. Well, with these drugs, what's happening is that these young men are committing outrageous atrocities because they are not in control. There's another deep part of themselves, perhaps, or whatever, that is taking control of their physical vehicle. They commit atrocities, they come home, they come off the drugs. The realization of what they have done hits home, they end up committing suicide. And fortunately, I mean, there's an increasing amount of support for them, but not enough. All of this, though, all of this contributes to creating the malleable blockhead. And of course it doesn't stop there. You know, we go on to the GM foods. George Carlin said, you know, those who don't watch TV and those who don't read the newspapers know a damn sight more than those who do. And he's absolutely right. Absolutely right. I haven't had a TV in the house for 8 years now. I don't even know where I would ever find the time to watch it, but I don't have TV. I must confess I do buy probably about half a dozen newspapers a day. I hate to admit it, but I am a regular buyer of the Sun and the Mail. Very important. 13 million people read the Sun in this country. It's by reading the Sun that I know what the vast majority of people in this country believe. God help them, exactly. Trevor Kavanaugh, you know, the most influential political writer in this country. And now, of course, he's a Murdoch clone. You know, the Daily Mail, the second widest read paper in the country, and of course, you know, by a lot of the middle classes.
The Morning Star is not read enough.
The Morning Star, probably not. No, David Halpin, my good friend, of course, is a regular reader and contributor to the Morning Star. I mean, the alternative media is where you're going to find the truth.
Yeah.
There's no question about that. I mean, the likes of Robert Fisk, you know, burn a candle. But it is the alternative media. And that's why the likes of Press TV, Russia Today, Edge Media are a threat to the establishment. Mm. You know, some of you will be aware, some of you were there, you know, in Conway Hall last September when I was speaking at an event with Professor Christopher French, Karen Douglas, and the Demos twins, Jamie Bartlett. And I mean, these are government-sponsored academics paid to research those who have an alternative view. They call us conspiracy theorists. And, you know, basically what I presented, in fact, the YouTube of my presentation is online. And so you can see what I presented. There were two mainstream media journalists at that event, one from The Guardian and one from The Independent. When their articles eventually appeared, which was about a month after the event, I was completely airbrushed out. Which was wonderful, because what it meant was that they couldn't demonise me, they couldn't find a way to marginalise me, so the only way in which they could deal with it was to ignore me. Because at that time, I was the only one who had put their presentation up on YouTube. Now, actually, all the other presentations are up on YouTube, so you can hear what these other people have to say. But these people, I mean, one of them, Karen Douglas, who wrote a paper on conspiracy theorists. Actually, every conspiracy theorist was a student, weren't they?
Yeah.
They were simply a random student. So, I mean, it was just ridiculous. Mm. But she actually nailed it right from the outset when she said, you know, in the work we do, in looking at conspiracy theories, truth isn't an issue. Truth isn't an issue. In other words, what they were really saying was we are funded by government to find out why it is that people don't believe what the government tells them through the mainstream media. Well, because some of us aren't blockheads. Well, we were maybe at one time. I will hold my hand up. Certainly until I was 34. I never had any cause to question the orthodox version of reality. And it didn't happen overnight. It took me 6 years to come to terms with the fact that everything I thought I knew was complete bollocks. And I had to re-educate myself and take responsibility for my worldview as opposed to regurgitate what I read from the mainstream media. And the good news is that more and more people are doing that. You know, and as you all know, once the first domino falls, once something gets your attention and you realise that the world is not as it's presented by the mainstream media, there's no turning back. There's no turning back. I think there's only one known case in history where that's occurred. Oh, you know. Yeah. You see? You know who it is. It's one person in history. No, for the rest, you know, basically once you realise what's occurring, there's no going back, and then you start the journey. The journey of re-educating yourself, taking responsibility for how you hold a worldview, and it's quite liberating, isn't it? We still have to live within this construct, but there are ways that we can live within the construct without subjugating ourselves, but it does require a massive change in the way we think. And I'm not making light of it, it's not easy, it's like all things, you know. You don't become a seventh Dan black belt by attending three sessions of karate or whatever. It takes time, it takes effort, it takes study, it takes practice. But everything that I share on the Shift workshops is absolutely based in practical experience. And the way in which I've built these workshops is in many cases, in most cases, the things we talk about, I've had the practical experience and then I've gone away and done the research to understand that experience. And when you actually start to trawl what's out there, There's an incredible amount of information and research that's out there, but it's not regarded by academia as orthodox. But it's out there. So consequently, I don't give a damn what orthodox academics think anymore. As far as I'm concerned, they're an irrelevance. They're part of the construct. And one day, maybe they'll come to their realization. But as I share in the workshop, there are some of these orthodox academics that have such an existential attachment to their worldview that they will not even admit when they have an experience that they can't explain. They would rather deny it and stay with their orthodox construct than actually show some intellectual curiosity to try and understand what it is they've experienced. The good news is that more and more people are starting to embrace these experiences and understand that we can live, to coin perhaps a very old phrase, and it will mean different things to different people, but we can live in grace, in the grace of the universe. We don't have to be reliant on this artificial construct of our left brain. We can actually access the full range of our capabilities and capacities. And as we put that into practice, well, to say the world's your oyster is an absolute understatement. But unfortunately, that's all I have time for this evening. I think we probably have about 5 minutes or so that I can do questions, because otherwise I'm going to get kicked out without getting my kit out.
Can you talk a bit about Jacques Fresco?
Jacques Fresco, the Venus Project. Okay, the Venus Project and the Zeitgeist Movement. Mm-hmm. If you want to understand where they're coming from, the most important book that you can read is a book called Technocracy, Inc., written by Marion King Hubbard and somebody else whose name escapes me. But Marion King Hubbard, in partnership with the other author, they wrote it in 1934. This is the basis of both the Venus Project and the Zeitgeist Movement. It's also the basis for resource-based economy. Okay, which is also where the smart meter comes in. And the smart meter is always linked into Agenda 21. I mean, it's a massive part of the web. But if you just latch on to some of those phrases, like Agenda 21, Marion King Hubbard, Maurice Strong, I mean, you'll see these are all pieces of a jigsaw, and it's all part of the jigsaw to effectively push people into effectively a one-world-controlled paradigm.
Is this the same as what cloud computing is about now?
Absolutely, yeah.
There's a video on YouTube called Technocracy. It's a presentation by Patrick Wood, and that does a pretty good breakdown of
And of course, Zbigniew Brzezinski, who is Obama's mentor, Zbigniew Brzezinski demonstrated his attachment to the technocratic agenda when he published Between Two Ages, the Technotronic Grid, the Technotronic Control Grid, which he published in 1970. Yeah. Yes, sir?
I wonder whether there might be World War III if Russia comes in on the side of Iran, because Russia has serious problems if there's the potential for regime change in Iran.
It may well. Listen, I mean, the bottom line is that the EU has effectively declared war on Iran. Okay? I mean, basically, by threatening not to purchase Iranian oil, by threatening to effectively shut down their overseas assets, it's a declaration of war. And in fact, the reaction in Ireland is much stronger than here, because of course, up until Ireland finally signed into the Treaty of Lisbon, Ireland had enjoyed neutrality. And now the Irish people are beginning to realise that, because they were told, by the way, they were told when they voted in the referendum that their neutrality would not be affected. And I mean, one of the things that I was doing when I was touring Ireland at that time was explain to people, of course your neutrality is going to be affected, because you no longer have jurisdiction over your foreign policy. So if the EU declare war, then you're part of it. You can't opt out. Well, now the realisation is hitting home, because the Irish people have realised that basically war, they have effectively declared war on Iran. Now, there's no question, I mean, I was talking about this a number of years ago, the industrial military complex is gagging for World War III, absolutely gagging for World War III. The good news is that there are a number of senior military leaders in the US who are astute enough to realise just how suicidal the attack, any attack on Iran may be. So hopefully sanity will prevail. But you know, something else is occurring, and unfortunately we don't have time to talk about it this evening. But I think that something is going to happen which nobody could predict, nobody could expect, and it's going to change this whole agenda.
Yeah.
Now, this has happened in a small way with the climate change, because people don't realise that up until December 2009, up until late November 2009, we were literally this close to the World Trade Organization, which is 190-odd countries, signing an agreement which would have provided the basis for global governance, all on the back of the climate change agenda and global warming. 2 weeks before that event in Copenhagen, the Climategate emails were released, which completely derailed that agenda. I mean, the Copenhagen conference still went ahead, but it was a damp squib. And they even tried to water it down and say, oh, yeah, well, you know, that's just a few extremists in the climate science group. And then they went to Durban late last year, and the game plan was to reignite the whole of the Copenhagen agreement and establish the basis for global governance again. And what happened? The second tranche of Climategate emails. And now the politicians are beginning to realise that basically the climate change bullshit is a dead duck. Now, these guys have spent 40 years creating this global warming myth. And because of the Climategate emails, it's a damn squib. I mean, you know, anybody with the capability of a critical thought and the inclination to take a cursory glance at the Climategate emails can see that the whole thing was a construct. And if you want to take a quick look, the best document is written by a guy called Dr. John P. Costella, an Australian PhD physicist, and he did an analysis of the Climategate emails, and you wouldn't even need to get beyond page 20 just to see what a complete crock of this is. And you see the emails from the climate scientists basically all agreeing with each other that they're just going to promote this construct because it's very lucrative for them. So something's going to come out of left field, I think, and stop World War III. I think, I mean, I absolutely believe that. But that's not going to stop these guys from trying.
What about 2012 Olympics?
2012 Olympics, well, there's a whole different subject. Okay, I ain't going to be anywhere near London. Well, that's a very good question. I don't know where I'm going to be. This is going to be my last appearance at the Glastonbury Symposium. In fact, last year was going to be my last appearance, but I was persuaded to give it one more year. So this is going to be my last appearance at the Glastonbury Symposium, and this year's Glastonbury Symposium is on the opening weekend of the Olympics. Then watch where I'm going. Okay, there's two potential dates. My bet is August the 12th. I think something very significant is going to be launched on August the 12th, which is the closing ceremony. In fact, I touch on that in this DVD, The Shift. But some very interesting research has come my way recently, which I'm still going through, and I still need to corroborate some parts of it. But it's very good research, but I'm not totally buying into it at the moment. But nonetheless, it's coming up with a very similar conjecture that there will be a major event at the Olympics, but they're going for August the 4th. Now, August the 4th, and then, by the way, they have also suggested that the target's going to be the Dome. And the Dome on August the 4th will be hosting the female gymnastics. And most of the female gymnastics in there will be Chinese and Russian. And most of them will be young virgins. So getting into the whole esoterica of that. The bottom line is that these socio-psychopaths who have an occult belief system that bears no relationship to anything that anyone in the wider world has, but they will not be able to let something of the significance of the London 2012 Olympics pass without taking the opportunity to accelerate their agenda for global governance. And the Rockefeller Report, I can't remember the name of the report off the top of my head, but it was published in May of 2010, And the Rockefeller Foundation use hypothetic scenarios to discuss events that could be used to accelerate their agenda of moving towards global governance. And in this document published in May of 2010, they talk about an attack at the London Olympics which kills 13,000 people. I mean, look, these guys will stop at nothing. I mean, they consider love and compassion to be weakness. They believe it, that's why they believe that humanity is no real challenge to them, because we do not have the capacity to commit the atrocity that these guys can do without batting an eyelid. But of course the reality is there's way more of us than there is of them. We just got to get our act together. And I hope that something will achieve that before these guys unleash whatever it is they're going to unleash at the London Olympics. My bet, by the way, is still on the something of the order of magnitude of the fake alien invasion. They have the technology, they have the capability, they have the media capacity, they have the CGI, the computer graphics technology. I mean, look at Independence Day. That film is now 16 years old. All you've got to do is take some of the scenes from Independence Day and put news on the bottom, and half the world's population will believe it. The bottom line is, whatever happens at the London Olympics that's out of the ordinary, do not take it at face value.
Is it not nuclear?
It may well be. I mean, that's why I certainly won't be anywhere near London, I can assure you. Could well be. It could be a dirty bomb. I mean, look, there's any possibility.
Still underneath it.
It could well be.
It's documented it's that there's a nuclear dump well site underneath. They've moved part of it 300 yards away from the main stadium.
There you go.
Ian, it was scenarios for the future of technology and international development.
Thank you. That's the report, yes.
And you can come and see the quote if you like on this later.
13,000, correct?
Yeah.
Number 13
as well.
Yeah. So, you know, the bottom line is that anybody who tells you they know exactly what's going to happen over the coming year is either delusional or part of the script writing team. That's why the important thing is just to be prepared for anything. Anything. And not get caught up in the drama. Not get caught up in the trauma and just say, it is what it is, it is what it is. Now, how do we move forward from this? And I genuinely believe that something is going to happen which is actually going to pull people together.
Yeah, yeah.
And in, you know, a year's time or whatever, maybe even less, it's not going to be 50, 60 people coming to events like this, it's going to be 500, 600. You know, and hopefully then out of groups like this will spawn local groups and community groups, and people will start to find community, which of course is being delivered. It's no accident pubs are shutting down, by the way.
Yeah.
Right? It's no accident at all. It's all part of breaking up the community. We gotta get through this and then rebuild. The one thing I do know for sure is that everything that's occurring right now is not sustainable. And the one thing that, or one of the most significant things that drives me in terms of my motivation for doing what I do, is I'm not proud of the legacy that we're leaving the next generation or the generation after that. And whatever time I've got left on this mortal coil, I'll make my little bit of effort to try and redress that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, in being pulled together, we've got to be extremely careful, because it's in coming together, natural human tendency and urge, and out of love, that is hijacked. So that's what is...
Absolutely.
...turned against us.
No, no, I mean, and that's why right now it's not time. The time is not now. The time now is to encourage people to literally go away and take responsibility for their own understanding of what's occurring. I mean, I run a mile from groups, and you know, I think the important thing is that, you know, we do as much as we can right now independently, encourage people to take responsibility for their understanding of what's going on, and then when the time is right, you know, it'll happen organically. Last question, I think.
Did the EU pass something about internet censorship today?
Today? I'm not sure about today, but the US certainly has with the SOPA legislation.
Can I just say, I read on Wikipedia, it's today's date, they were sort of signed for it. made, I imagine, a significant nose lift, because that's how I keep in touch with your videos on YouTube.
No, no, listen, I mean, the one thing that I hope that the young generation is able to do is to be able to replace what we have with the internet if it suddenly disappears. I don't think the internet is going to disappear anytime soon, because we've already got a global economic meltdown, and so much of the economy right now is reliant on the internet. That they're not going to be able to pull the plug on it in a heartbeat.
So you're not worried about that too much just yet?
No, not just yet. But I mean, it's certainly something that you know, we need to be aware of.
They're not talking about pulling the plug, they're just talking about firewalling it, though, aren't they?
Well, and they're trying to do that in Australia. But I mean, the bottom line is that normally the guys developing or trying to develop the legislation and the technology are in their 40s and 50s. The beauty of the teens and the 20s is that they have, they're not constrained by the experience. They have the creativity, you know, to really sort of find ways through this. I mean, you know, traditionally, I mean, this is what we're losing. You know, traditionally, I mean, when I worked in the oil industry, you know, we used to work on the basis that an engineer had contributed his best by the time he was 28. So you literally took the engineer for everything you could get out of him between graduating and 28. After that, you could start to move him into management. But you needed the young guys coming through, because that was where your creativity came. And part of that, by the way, is not so much the fact that people lose creativity. It's that what takes over is the constraint of the construct that they become comfortable with. And that's when you hear people say, oh, you can't do that. Oh, you know, you can't do that. It's the young people saying, why not? And that's what we need to encourage, you know. Anyway, you've been a wonderful audience. We obviously, there's some uncensored there. If you want to look at the annual subscription, we've got some forms up here. Have a look at the DVDs, and hopefully see you at the Shift 2 workshops. But either way, this is going to be an incredible year. Mm. It's going to be a year that I believe that we won't forget in a hurry. Mm. I have no idea what's going to occur, but it's going to be bloody interesting. Thanks a lot.
Where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.